The following is a message from George Trujillo, a data strategist at DataStax. As a reminder, DataStax is the only financial sponsor of Data Mesh Radio and the Data Mesh Learning community at this time. I work with George, and I would highly recommend speaking with him. It's always a fun conversation.
One of the key value propositions of a data mesh is empowering lines of business to innovate with data. So it's been really exciting for me personally to see data mesh in practice and how it's maturing. This is a significant organizational transformation, so it must be well understood. Empowering developers, analysts, and data scientists with downstream data has been part of my personal data journey that reemphasized the importance of reducing complexity in real-time data ecosystems and the criticality of picking the right real-time data technology stack. I'm always open and welcome the opportunity to share experiences and ideas around executing a data mesh strategy. Feel free to email or connect with me on LinkedIn if you'd like to talk about real-time data ecosystems, data management strategies, or data mesh. The contact information can be found in the notes below. Thank you.
A written transcript of this episode is provided by Starburst. For more information, you can see the show notes.
Welcome to Data Mesh Radio with your host, Scott Hurlman, sponsored by Starburst. This is Adrian Estala, VP and Field CDO at Starburst, and host of Data Mesh TV. Starburst is the leading contributor to Trino, the open source project, and the Data Mesh for Dummies book that I co-wrote with Colleen Tarto and Andy Mott. To claim your free book, head over to starburst.io.
Data Mesh Radio, a part of the Data as a Product podcast network, is a free community resource provided by DataStax. Data Mesh Radio is produced and hosted by Scott Hurlman, the co-founder of the Data Mesh Learning Community. This podcast is designed to help you get up to speed on a number of data mesh-related topics. Hopefully, you find it useful. Driving towards data-driven, how to add more data to your org's decisions. Bottom line up front, what are you going to hear about and learn about in this episode? I interviewed Stephen Galsworthy, former head of data at TomTom, obviously giving he's no longer with the company, he was only representing his own views. So some key takeaways or thoughts from Stephen's point of view. Number one, just because the products you sell are made from data, that doesn't mean you necessarily have a good process for leveraging data to make your products better. You need to embed information collection into how you create products, how customers interact with your offerings. If you don't, what are you going to analyze? Number two, his concept of the AI flywheel. If you can get good information on product user experience, you can feed that into AI systems that generate incremental insights to prove your user experience even more. Hopefully that generates more users, which generate even more information to improve even further. Again, that flywheel. Number three, if data collection on usage is not part of your business model for any number of reasons, it can be hard to convince customers and/or partners to enable that data collection, even if it's simply to improve the user experience. Try to add it to your product development as early as possible. Number four, if your organization is data hesitant, look for existing success stories from data. Look for something that couldn't have happened without the data, and then share that success internally to drum up more interest. Number five, potentially controversial, data should rarely be the deciding factor. Data should be a touch point that can strongly inform or usually more just give clarity. Use it for giving clarity or measuring as you iterate. Help execs understand that it's not magic and that it's not all right or wrong. It's just some information that helps you understand what's going on. Number six, it's easy to trust data when it confirms your intuition. How do you use it when it doesn't? How much credence should you give the data? Number seven, potentially controversial, High-performing companies tend to be those that use data to help make adjustments to their product strategy, using it as a tight feedback loop. It's not as though the data decides, but it constantly informs and kind of confirms what you were thinking. And yes, not absolute confirmation and all that, you know, the data can never confirm a hypothesis. Number 8, don't fall into the trap of collecting all the data you can. We've talked about this multiple times, but do think about what you could do if you had additional data. What might that inform? Work ahead. You don't get past data the day you start to say we should be collecting this data. Number 9, there is a big difference between producing data and producing data as a product. But if we don't incentivize and assist teams to produce data as a product, few will, and then your data practices will remain fragile and not scalable and all sorts of other bad words. Number 10, data producers need to be able to understand who has taken a dependency on their data, but it's too hard in general right now for them to understand. Better technology offerings here can help. Number 11, a great, possibly the best incentive for a team to produce their data as a product is what their data consumers can provide back to them in the form of insights. How can a team managing an app get more insight to improve their app by sharing their data? That's a cohesive org-wide data practice instead of domains only focusing on themselves. Now, Stephen did talk about in some very large organizations, that feedback loop is way, way, way too long. So figure out how to shorten it. Figure out how, you know, an immediate consumer or two consumers down the line can start to provide value back instead of, oh, this has to go through 12 different orgs processing through your data before you're going to get useful insights back. Number 12, in production, kind of quote unquote in production should not be seen as the end goal, right? Or the key goal. That's a project mindset. In production just means the start of a new phase for your data product. Number 13, to get a team to data driven, find a data ambassador within a team, right? And if there isn't one, if there isn't somebody that's really excited about dealing with data, deploy one into that team. Really encourage someone to be the lead for wrangling their data. Work to develop a passion for data in someone in the team to spread to the rest of the team. You know, personal note here, staying away from infectious analogies, but think that way, right? You want somebody who is spreading the love of data and getting more people on board. Number 14, and finally, the most data-driven teams have a mindset of always be experimenting. It's not about being right at the start. It's about constantly trying, learning, and getting better. With that bottom line up front done, let's jump into the interview. Very, very excited for today's episode. I've got Stephen Galsworthy here, who is previously head of data at TomTom. Especially with previously only representing his own views, he is going to be starting a very exciting new role in the near future, maybe even when this comes out. But I'll say just to go check out his LinkedIn to see what he's doing now. But so what we're going to be covering is we're going to be talking about, you know, kind of what is the whole point of doing data mesh and data in general? Like, how do we actually move past the we're doing data work to how do we leverage data to actually move us forward? Like, stop doing analytics for the sake of analytics. Like, how do we actually transform and inform our decisions? And then we're also going to talk about something that's come up a lot of like teams are using their own data to drive themselves forward, but like, we're now asking them to do it so that they're driving the rest of the organization forward. How do we prioritize that? How do we actually work with them to make that something that's, you know, that they're incented to do rather than just go, you now have this additional mandate. Here is the stick I'm going to use. So go do it. And so, I think we're going to talk in a lot of specifics and stuff, but I think high level of like, why are we doing the thing? Which a lot of times the conversations lose sight of. So before we get to that, Stephen, if you don't mind, if you could give a bit of an introduction to yourself, and then we can jump into the conversation at hand.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Thanks for having me on the podcast. My name's Stephen. I have a background in mathematics and data science. I've typically been working in teams and companies for a number of years that have really been specializing in taking interesting, unique data sets with some kind of real world meaning, developing and deploying complex algorithms on top of those data sets to create innovative products and then launch them at scale. I spent roughly a decade in the energy sector, working on things such as reducing energy wastage in homes or optimizing the grid network. Latterly, I've worked at TomTom, a company known for making maps and navigation products. And shortly, I'll be starting a new role where I hope to get my hands in a lot of depth with satellite imagery data and building some very interesting insight products on top of that.
Yeah, awesome. And I think kind of what you talked about of like putting things into real world usage and also selling data externally, right? Like that's what a lot of this mm-hmm. is about as well from your history. I think it gives you the multiple perspectives on this. So let's talk about that, general concept of where so many companies, even talking to purchasers of the data that you were helping put together and things like that, where so many companies are focused in the what and not the why, and like, why are we actually doing this? How do we feel like we have to do data because everyone's telling us data is the new oil, instead of, how do you kind of focus on making sure the data work ties to actual outcomes? And then we can get into how do you actually convince people to actually use the data to do their outcomes, not just say, this is what the mm-hmm. outcomes should be.
Yeah, I think sort of a common theme of organizations I've worked in is they've had a lot of focus on really building data-powered products. So that being basically some product that it's got an algorithm really at the core of it. That means that there often comes a lot of maturity within the organization focused around the creation of these products. Often that comes on the flip side with a little bit less maturity around actually using data to make informed decisions within the organization. So it's often the contrast that you've got an organization that's really set up the main products that they are producing are essentially data products at heart. I mean, if you look at something like a smart thermostat device that's sending a lot of IoT data, I mean, what you're essentially providing is a data product, creating a map. For example, a map in its bare essence is a very intricate, but a data product at heart. So on one hand, you've got this kind of real focus on sort of a product mindset. You've got data really running through the veins of the company, but often that there's still a struggle to use that data not only to create a new product, but to iterate it upon and improve that product using sort of some of the more typical analytical approaches we'd like to see.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting insight about what data do you get about your data product, right? Like what is that? And that can be internal or external, but like, mm-hmm. how are your customers actually using that? Are they willing to share with you their usage data? Because it's so important to understand where is there the market for additional information that you want to be adding, whether that's a new data product or expanding that. When you've been working in that type of an organization, how did you start to have those conversations around, hey, I know we're packaging information, but like we should be using it ourselves. Like, how do you start to have that conversation around, we're not driving ourselves with our, you know, and maybe the data that you're bringing in or that you're creating isn't that useful for yourself, right? So how do you start to say, we need to start creating this other data that isn't actually part of the product. And so that's not the wheelhouse. And that's not what we do about data. We create data to sell data. And you're asking us to create data to be better in how we create data.
Yeah, I think sort of the key concept that underpins a lot of these data powered products is you to be successful in that, you need to set up some kind of data flywheel, sometimes known particularly for AI products as sort of the virtuous cycle of AI. That's essentially the concept that you start with some data that's being produced by some users. You're able to create some kind of algorithm that's trained upon that data. You then sort of unleash that allows you to improve the core product or the product experience. That ultimately, hopefully, that means your product becomes more successful. You get more users. That gives you more data. You can use that data to train better algorithms that then improves the experience, and you start getting into this loop that goes around where the data is not only a part of the product, but it's what allows you to get better at what you're doing. Obviously, in some industries, this is one that the company you're working for controls all parts of that feedback loop. But in many organizations, the business model is B2B or B2B2C even, where you need to work with your customers and partners to be able to access that data to allow you to provide an enriched experience across the board. That's often a difficult conversation to have with partners. Take for example, I worked at a company called Qubi that was developing a smart thermostat product. So it was essentially allowing people to control the heating systems within their homes. This was sold via an energy utility. So the customers of my company's technology were customers of an energy utility. They didn't have a direct contractual relationship with the technology provider. But everyone is, so all parties want to improve the product experience, but it's not a simple matter of just handing over that customer relationship to you've got this kind of crazy tech startup that's trying to do something with IoT data, and you've got this larger, I'd say more traditional organization that is very much focused on it's customer satisfaction. Essentially, an energy utility is very good at marketing its services and billing people for those services. That's at the core, that's kind of the primary skills of an energy utility, particularly the ones that don't generate their own power. They're really there as that middleman. So they're not going to want to hand that over to a tech startup. From that position of the tech startup, you need access to these customers to be able to understand, okay, what do they need? We've just released this new product feature. Are people experiencing in the right way? I mean, how do you get that feedback loop and that information flowing back again? So I think that's a really important part of getting that data, because it's not just zeros and ones. You're talking in terms of this data has true meaning. It's what allows you to connect to the customers or the end users of the products you're creating.
I think a lot of what you're talking there is data as a product, right? It's the life cycle of production of data. It's not just analyzing what you've got. It's, okay, if we want to improve our product, we have to have a way to generate the information flow that allows us to improve our product. And so it is that virtuous cycle, but you're kind of kicking it off very specifically and saying, hey, the way that we interact, I think this is why SaaS and things like that are, you know, eating the world and, you know, software eating the world, but SaaS specifically, because you have that by default. you have the ability to see how people are using it. What are all the trends? What's kind of going to signal churn? What's going to signal a big upsell? What are all these different things? And so the more of that data that you're able to generate, the better. And even if it's not part of the product in and of itself, when you are selling that information externally, how have you had those conversations though with people where that isn't their traditional business model, right? A lot of people, even you think about generating data for external sale, but in a lot of other organizations as well, you have execs that have gotten by on being very good at execution and on understanding how things work rather than on the data. So like, how do you help them flip that switch to actually inform their decisions, whether that's to make sure that they create the data or actually inform themselves once they have that usage data?
It's difficult to flip that switch just to go sort of from one day to the next that they suddenly, okay, now we need the data. I think that so the cases that I've seen that's been most successful is you have some kind of example within an organization that someone's tried something and data has been kind of that trigger that's allowed something new to happen that wouldn't have happened otherwise. So that can be the creation of an entirely new product, or it can be something as, okay, we wanted to try to make a decision between do we go for option A on this, option B, and we've used data to make a more informed decision. I think essentially at that decision-making level within the organization, it's really building up trust of using data as a way of making a more informed decision. I've worked with a lot of executives and sort of convincing them of the role of data. It's not that you can just, okay, turn to your data scientists, they do some fancy analysis, and you've got a very clear answer. But it gives you another touch point on a particular decision to make. I think the key thing it really unlocks for you is the ability to experiment and experiment quickly. So particularly when you're talking in terms of creating data-powered products, what you often find there is no one has the intuition to fully define what that product will look like. So what the best products are going to be created by the companies that are able to iterate most quickly. And the data flow coming back is one of those things that allows you, okay, we've put an experiment out there. It could be something as simple as an A-B test. And you're going, okay, yep, the direction that we need to go in is a little bit more in this direction. Let's try it out. And equally important, if you try something, you can have a room of 10 people that everyone thinks it's a great idea. If you get it in front of customers or end users and they're not feeling it, they're responding it to in a different way, that gives you such immense information that you can start to steer differently.
Well, and quickly, right? Like that it's not...
Quickly, indeed.
And one thing that I don't think you used the words in there, but I sensed what you were talking about of building trust that, you know, data is going to be, that using data is going to drive better results, but also that desire to use data, right? It's not just that you can trust it. It's that there is a desire that this is, you started to talk about that of what can it unlock and going and talking to those people and saying, this is that incremental. This is where it enables you to do this thing that you couldn't. It enables you to figure things out. And one thing somebody mentioned recently was FIFO, or was it FOFO, fear of figuring out, which is relitigating past decisions with data, and that you have to be able to have somebody has the trust that you're not going to say you made bad decisions in the past versus is it a good decision to continue going forward? And that is a real legit concern, because if I'm going to do this thing and it's going to look through everything and say, did I make a bad decision historically? You know, you've got hindsight. Great. Like, yes, this other thing would have been great, but you know, it's kind of like, you know, Blockbuster made a bunch of silly decisions, you know, in the whole thing with Netflix and all that. But, you know, was each one of those decisions a bad decision, or did they kind of add up to it? And like, we don't know what they were looking at. We don't know if they didn't have the data, or the data was telling them something or whatever. But if they had had the data, they probably would have seen the writing on the wall much quicker and pivoted much better. But, you know, it's still also hard to say these people made really dumb decisions when we know what happened instead of we know what they're able of to understand in that moment.
Yeah, I think you've hit on an important point there. It's not so much your necessarily your belief in using data. It's actually whether you use it. When it comes down to it, are you using data to help you make more informed decisions, or are you sort of reverting back to that default of, okay, let's just follow our intuition on this one? And most organizations have been incredibly successful of getting to where they are at this moment in time by using that intuition, following that. The people, most leaders within an organization have got to their position because they've followed intuition. They're probably combined with luck. History, things have worked out over a period of time. So you can keep going in that direction. I think there's a real sort of, strong sort of human incentive to kind of push in that direction. I think that's really important. That's why I think it's very important that you frame sort of the involvement of data as making a more informed decision, rather than there's very few business decisions that you can completely rely on the data. Either the data is not clear, but most of the time it's the problem formulation itself. You know, it's a little bit fuzzy, and you need that expertise in knowledge of the business itself to be able to put that in the right context. So it's using data to make a more informed decision rather than handing it over. It's not like using it's not just a calculator that you're going to ask the computer the answer and it's going to say, yeah, this is exactly what you should do. But you should have a little bit more trust in the fact that you're informed of the consequences of a decision.
The human in the loop is smarter on this. And I think that is like I data-driven decision, that phrase to me, it's like, did the data make the decision, or did the human like that? I like data informed more than data driven. You know, we can get into semantics and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that are you actually using it is really, really important. And one thing that's kind of come up recently in my mind is execution eats strategy for breakfast. And so how do we start to think about data informing the execution, not just the strategy? Because if you can out execute somebody, then do you really care as much about the strategy, and or can you just rely on intuition? And like, I'm not asking you to answer this and be like, you know, you have it all figured out, but like, how do you think about that? Like, we can use the data to execute better. Is it that showing them the experimentation? Is it the showing them that rather than, you know, it's about making these huge strategic decisions, it's also about these kind of day-to-day course corrections and being better in that way?
Yeah, definitely. I think a good example of that is working with individual product teams. And there's sort of a maturity journey that you can go through of how you're using data in your sort of product analytics. So you start in a situation where you essentially, you have no data, you're not using data at all. The first step, you need to just start collecting data if you don't have it already. Once you start collecting data, you can have someone that was doing a little bit more data analysis. That can be a defined role of a data analyst or data scientist within a team, but it can just be a software engineer or a product manager looking into data to analyze some user trends. From then onwards, you want to take those steps towards getting towards a situation where you can do faster experimentation. So you want to be able to have the infrastructure in place that you can collect data, that you can set up something like an A/B test, so you can release option A of an app, option B of an app, or even a small feature. And then you want to be able to collect that quickly, be able to do the analysis. That will start with a data analyst doing that work. As time moves on, the team gets more comfortable, you're going to have more sort of this democratization of data access. That means that the product manager or the software engineers can themselves very quickly create a dashboard on a new feature, understand what's going on, look a little bit more of the trends of usage over time, and your data analyst or data scientist can then really focus on setting up scientifically rigorous experiments, or they can concentrate perhaps more on the advanced analysis. So you see this sort of maturity trend over time. And that can be really helpful for, then sort of making these decisions at sort of the micro level within an organization. So as you say, a lot more focused on execution, using data on a daily basis by individuals and small teams. That will cascade up to the strategy level of an organization as well. This means that you can iteratively move very quickly across the whole org.
And one thing that I think has come through in a couple of different of your answers is within the company at the micro level and not at just trying to do this as if every domain needs to do this at the same point versus building that momentum, building that desire where you went and you worked with this domain and they had a big win and then you tout that to everybody and then the other domains want to follow suit, but that you don't say, I'm going to do this with everybody. And again, it's not that switch you flip. And so I would like to hear a little bit about how you also do think about what data to collect, because there is kind of this, I need to collect all the data, I need to store all the data, I need to do all of this stuff, which can be harmful. But at the same point, you do need to figure out what data will be useful or what data do you think will be useful and start collecting it. Because when you want to actually analyze it, it's not as if, okay, we just need the last days of data. We need the last few months to make an actual informed decision.
Yeah, I guess I've been fortunate in a sense that the organizations I've worked in have typically had ultimately some kind of hardware product, some kind of IoT or sensor product, where you have quite a strong cost of data acquisition in the first place. So this could be, to give an example from TomTom, acquiring data from connected vehicles that are driving around. To be able to get that data into the cloud, you're essentially, someone in that chain needs to pay for the usage of the cellular network. So there needs to be a SIM card or equivalent in a vehicle, and you need to pay for that usage. So you need, in that context, you're always very critical of exactly what data to collect. You don't want to, it's different in that sense from a website, for example, where you could just literally collect everything, like the exact mouse position of every user or something. You can start dreaming of the immense amount of detail that you could collect. So that in the organizations I've been in, there's always been a little bit of a forcing function to collect as little data as possible. So through that lens, it's typically been the sort of the data science teams that are saying, okay, well, actually, if you were able to collect this data on top, and we were able to build up maybe a few months of this data, then you can look into, okay, make sort of an indication of, okay, this could unlock this potential new feature. If we collect this data from a certain type of vehicle that's driving around, maybe we can use that to help drivers optimize their routing in a specific way. So I think that's a strong way of persuading people of what data to collect, is give them an indication of the products that could unlock, because the products is always very it's quite concrete. You can put it in terms of what would be the benefit for an end user. There's other types of data that have huge potential benefit for decision making, but there's always going to be a bit of an inherent risk that until you've got data scientists that are actually looking at that real data coming from the organization, you can't give a 100% guarantee that there is going to be that true value coming from it, that it will improve the insight that you could obtain. So you need to sometimes take a risk on that. And when I say a risk, I mean, you need to perhaps pay to collect that data. You also need to be incredibly sensitive towards the source of that data. Is that end user data about the location of vehicles in real time? You know, something like that you need to give a lot of consideration to. If, for example, it's just, where do people click within my app? That data, generally speaking, is less sensitive.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of what you're talking there is if we can only make safe bets, then those generally aren't, you know, you've already taken care of the low hanging fruit in a lot of cases. So you're not going to end up with the big values and the big, like, hey, if you can't make a bet that doesn't pay off, then you're not making a bet, right? That's not what the definition of a bet is. And so you have to be able to figure out how to limit your blast radius. You know, you spend you're a company that's doing, you know, $100 million of revenue in a year, and you're like, I'm going to make this bet, and it's going to be $1 million bet, and, you know, we don't really know whether it's going to pay off or not. That's a pretty big thing versus, hey, we're going to start collecting this, and we're going to iterate towards that value. We're going to start with a $10,000 or whatever, you know, the numbers always kind of get a little fuzzy with math and stuff like that. But so I did want to transition into a lot of what you're saying here is also about, you know, the specific, you know, at the company level, and that we have this challenge in data mesh and not in data mesh about teams using their own data and being really, really cognizant of their data. And Chris at Endava had mentioned that one thing that he sees is that data is kind of embedded in an application for that team. So they're not even seeing the same data as somebody else, right? They're seeing it with context that is absence when they try and actually share it with someone else. But like, how do you start to think about working with teams to get them to see that bigger organizational picture? And how have you found incenting them works? Because it's like, okay, yeah, I get it. If I do this thing, it'll really help out that team, but that doesn't help me out in the end of the day. And yes, I wish we were all kumbaya, but if that's not my KPI and I spend a bunch of time helping you out and I miss my KPI, that's a net negative for me, not a net neutral. And so like, how do I get it so that I could actually do that at an organizational level? So big question, but like, how do you start to think about that conversation when somebody brings that up?
Yeah, it's I think a lot of the time you find in larger organizations, that you at the sort of that micro team level, you have perhaps the team have this huge amount of very specific domain knowledge around the data that maybe they're collecting some of that data, or they're producing some of it. They're creating some. No, it's maybe a byproduct of something else. They really understand that data inside out. What is often the case is that team doesn't know downstream in the organization who is using that data or not. You'd love it if you would be able to map that out. But often in organizations, when they reach a certain scale, you just don't have a clear view of who was using it when. I think that's a slightly side topic, but that is something that's improving. There's some technology solutions around it that make it a little bit more easy to track these things at scale. But just understanding dependencies within teams, between teams, is not a given in organizations. I think the other thing that's important there is the difference between producing data and producing a data product. I think a lot of the time you just have data flying around that people will pick up and use as they like. But if a team is creating a data product, it has a few more guarantees that go with it. There's some guarantee of availability of the data. There's some guarantee of the quality of that data. But that's something that takes effort, that takes engineering time to be able to maintain that quality and that availability. There may even be some metrics that they're going to define that very specifically, so the end users, the internal end users of that data, know what to expect. So you've got sort of this broad setup that there's multiple teams. No one's exactly sure of who's consuming the data that they're producing. There is a sort of an inbuilt reluctance to move towards a data product because it requires engineering effort to wrap that up nicely in a product, because that effort could well be used for creating a new feature, reducing some tech debt. You know, there's a long list of things that could be done instead of that. Typically, if a team is moving towards developing a data product from their data, the biggest beneficiaries of that are not going to be that team themselves. It's going to be those other teams within the organization, or the consumers of that data product, or the users of that data product. So that's you sometimes get a mismatch of incentives. Strategies that I've seen to take a step beyond that. One is a clearer understanding of interdependencies between teams, particularly if you're looking at an organization, an organization that their main product is some very elaborate data-powered product. So from my recent experience at TomTom, creating a map of the world is an incredibly computationally intensive process requiring many, many teams, each producing subsets of data that are sort of going from everything from the raw sensors of vehicles perhaps driving around, detecting that there's a road in place, all the way through towards producing a map from that and then creating products on top, navigational products on top of that base map. Now, there's a lot of complexity there. So it's understanding how those things are linked together is important. Then it's empowering those teams to be able to easily create a sort of interchangeable and reusable data products. I think that comes with some sort of technology prerequisites. It's certainly a lot easier if all of that data is residing on the same cloud. It's not impossible to do if you've got multi-cloud in place within an organization, but it makes it a lot easier if you say, okay, for example, everything's going to be on the Azure stack, and you define the kind of interfaces that will be required, the type of API that you'd want to have to access that data product, and then you can shift towards more of a cookie cutter approach of scaling up that data product. The worst thing that you can do is allow each of those 100 teams within the organization the complete freedom of defining their technology stack and way of interfacing with a data product, because you will end up with 100 completely different options.
Yeah, I mean, I think just providing easy buttons and providing it where, you know, 80-90% of the time this covers it, or this mostly covers it, like just use what we've got, and that you don't say you must use what we've got, but if you have something that's out of the norm, come talk to us and we'll figure it out. But yeah, exactly. Like there's no added benefit. There's significant cost to not doing it.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's where we're sort of platform teams within an organization can really make a big difference, of just providing something that works for the sort of 80%, 90% of the time. It's basically try this out first. If it really doesn't work, feel free. Go whichever way you need technology to be able to move quickly. But this is a strong basis to start from.
So a couple of things that you mentioned earlier as well, something that I brought up of like data producers can't care about their consumers because they literally don't have the information flow to actually care about the downstream consumers. And so like, how do we do that? But when you're trying to go in and have a conversation with a producer, like, what do you think is the way to best buy them in? Is it just to go for the incentives? Is it to give them the capabilities to do this? And if they have the capabilities to do it relatively easily, they'll do it as long as they're, you know, somewhat incented? Or is it like, how have you found getting over that hurdle? Because this is that buy-in hurdle that a lot of people really, really struggle with. And I think a lot of people go for stick instead of carrot, but it's hard to figure out a scalable carrot to get these teams to produce data in such a way that others can consume it and that fits into the broader scale of the organization's data.
I think the best kind of carrot that I've seen in this context is related to that sort of that feedback loop, that flywheel effect, because you have a team very early in sort of the flow of data through an organization that's creating some information that's being consumed by seven teams following that, and that's eventually going to make something that's it's an app or a website or an API that goes to an external customer. From that external customer is where you want to get that feedback to improve things. That useful insight can also be incredibly valuable to that first team that's creating the first bit of information in the chain. So that could, for example, be a team that's in the mapping example. That could be a team that's extracting locations of buildings from satellite data. You know, they to be able to understand whether they've been able to detect that the hospital is exactly at that location, and this is where the entry point to the hospital car park is. The only way they're going to fully get that feedback through is by getting data from end customers, from people actually driving around and using the product. What that means is, so a good incentive, a good carrot there is defining clearly the end product that you're creating. And what I've seen work relatively effectively is defining sort of OKRs, so objectives and key results on a company level, of really getting teams to focus on the larger scale flywheels and loops that will enable the organization to learn quicker. That does need to be really from from the top of the organization down, really making that clear. Because otherwise, for each of those constituent parts of the of these data teams creating data products, you know, there's not a strong incentive otherwise. So if you, that's the carrot, then I think it always needs to be combined with some kind of stick, you know, of getting people to make that transition from producing data to producing data products. That often needs to come with, you know, you need to encourage people to move swiftly in that direction.
Well, and give them the capabilities. I think this is the big thing, is that a lot of times people are just handing over the ownership and not giving them those domains the capability and or the incentive, and they just go, you now have it. One thing that you said in there that I thought was, that you were kind of circling around, but that I think could be really interesting as well, is if you're trying to get data from a team, then you want to go to them and say, let's talk about what use cases could be useful from that data, because the rest of the organization needs that data. But let's talk about how your use case of that data plus another domain's data would be very usable to you. So let's start with you and talk about that. And that, like, if you've got that kind of reluctant domain, that's you go, okay, well, we're going to start with the benefit to you, even though we're asking you to participate in this broader, or, you know, organization-wide thing. We're going to start with that benefit to you, because we need to make, you know, a lot of times people come on and they say the first consumer for a data product should be the domain that's creating it. But in a lot of cases, they've already kind of done that if they're in a highly data literate domain. If they aren't, then giving them that capability does transform the domain. But if they already are like, we already use our own data exactly how we want to use our own data, then that isn't really an option. And so then you start to say, okay, how do I incent them? And it can't just, I think that of, okay, we're going to incent you by saying, we're going to focus on your use case first. There are other use cases that want your data, but let's build a reusable data product around this data because other people need it. But like, let's make sure that it serves a use case for you first. I think that's a kind of an interesting approach. It's not going to be universal because it's not going to always be that you can find that. But
yeah, I agree. If you can find that use case that has immediate benefit for the, for essentially for the team that's going to have to put in the hard work to get that data available, that makes things go a lot smoother. I've seen that work very well. I've also seen the situation where you're talking in terms of such big loops and chains within an organization. It's impossible to pinpoint that exact use case that is going to provide that immediate value. And you just need to have a culture within the organization that, how to say, if another team wins, me from within my team, I also feel that I'm winning. So you need to have this collaborative environment rather than competitive for that to really grow.
Easier said than done in a lot of organizations where they are. But yeah, I think it's also that you then say, okay, we need this in the long run, but let's find some short-term, like quicker wins and get them kind of maybe in the habit of this as we try and serve these huge, huge ones. But yeah, it's always, there's no silver bullet. I want you to wave your magic wand, but apparently you left that in another room. You don't have the ability to just...
No, I mean, that's what keeps us busy every day, right? Organizations are full of humans, and that's what makes it an interesting job to do.
Otherwise, the data could make the decisions instead of the human in the loop. So, one thing that you had talked about in the pre-call, and I like this analogy, is kind of thinking of your data and data products like gardening, right? Like a lot of people are thinking that data kind of in a projects style. Like, how have you found working with teams to get them to go, yes, you produce this thing, but like you have to actually treat it like a product. You have to continue to produce it. You have to continue to actually, approach it in such a way that you're not going to be
kind of causing those downstream dependencies to have continuous problems. Like, how have you found teaching someone that mindset shift? Because historically they have just kind of spewed off data and just said, whatever, or they've worked on a project and then it's done, I can now move on. Like, how are you finding that working?
Yeah, I've seen that a lot in the past, particularly with sort of data science teams, that there was, I'd say particularly sort of a few years back, there was this real strive of getting a data science project into production. And there was a feeling of, okay, it's in production now, let's go on and do the next thing. Like, in production is not the end. It's really just the beginning of the next phase. And you need to have the mindset and the capabilities within the team of being able to support that ongoing environment. You know, the things in production the data will change, things will break, there will be new customer requirements. It's something that needs to be to have as much automated monitoring in place as possible. You know, there's so much you need to do. You really need to have that kind of that DevOps or that MLOps mindset in place to really thrive. And that in sort of its real sort of human essence, there's a huge difference between sort of creating new products and new functionality and maintaining and iterating upon existing functionality. And quite often that involves very different mindsets within the individuals that thrive in those different environments. So it's really an evolution of teams when they get to that stage, to be able to maintain that innovative nature, as well as this ability to maintain data products or products in general that other teams or other end users are reliant upon.
Yeah, I think, it's again, it's one of those of mindset shift is probably the toughest, right? We don't have the technology, we don't have all that stuff ready for teams, but getting them into that, like, how can they be focused so much on the innovation is really, it's difficult. And you know, we talked in the pre-call about the kind of being proactive. Like, how easy have you, is it again, getting people to see the single use case? Is that what's worked for you? Is that like getting that mindset shift? Is it, you kind of have to hold their hand, or can you just say this other team did it and here's the roadmap to do it? Or like, cause a lot of people out there are really just struggling with, you know, maybe one or two domains where it's really a complication.
What I've seen work really well in that case is you need within a team sort of a data ambassador. That can be a data scientist that belongs to a more sort of centralized unit that is kind of parachuted in or deployed to that team in a long-term basis to support them in their growth. It can also just, it can be an enthusiastic team member. Good examples I've seen of a very highly data-driven product manager who's really driving the team of, in those daily conversations, going, okay, but what does the data have to say about this? You know, and asking and probing people. It can be, I've seen teams where that sort of data ambassador role has come from a software engineer, where it's come from a UX designer, you know, where it's, I think it makes a huge difference when teams are engaging with each other on a daily and weekly basis, that they're being triggered to take those next steps in adopting a data-driven approach or a data-informed approach. Because it's not something you can think about once a quarter. It's not something that you will do just because your CEO or CTO has talked about it in the all hands. You need to have that a combination of real sort of domain knowledge, understanding the end user problem, understanding the product that you're trying to create, and using data to make the smaller decisions easier. So that's where I've already seen things most effectively change. And that does require proactivity. It typically requires individuals that are passionate about using data to make a transformation within the company. And the good news is there's many hundreds of people that I've worked with that are really passionate about it. They've seen what can be done in other organizations they've worked at, you know, and that they want to bring that level of energy and insight into the organization where they currently have a role.
And one thing that I'm taking away from a couple of things you said throughout the episode, but especially there, of like making it easier to make the small decisions easier, right? Like that data doesn't have to be all or nothing. You don't have to swing for the fences at all times, especially as you're getting going, right? You'll get better and better. And then you aren't, you know, doing what would have been a massive scale, you know, very risky project is something that ends up being kind of ho-hum. And you can say, okay, well, we're going to collect this data. We're going to analyze this data and do kind of a down and dirty type of thing. And, oh, nope, the data is not telling us anything incremental. So we're going to stop collecting it. And that you can get to that pretty quick, and that you can get to that, but that you're not trying to start with, you know, the thing that a lot of people make mistakes with is starting with their, especially if you're not in this mode already, is starting with your biggest challenges. You have to learn how to do this before you can do it well. And you don't learn by doing with live ammo. You don't learn by doing when there's a ton of risk to it, a ton of economic risk, a ton of potential for if this goes sideways, it's going to be way worse than not have done it at all. Instead of, we learned something incremental. It didn't work out. We made a bet. It didn't pay off, and we move on to the next.
Yeah, I think the most important thing to get is the sort of the experience of using data, and just being able to build up that speed, that ability to iterate quickly is what becomes, I would say, the most important factor of innovation within a company going forward, is how quickly you can iterate and how quickly you can learn. That means that essentially, the role of data becomes particularly important in that early stage.
Yeah, well, and that it again, I think what you're saying is that we can't put too much pressure on the data itself, and we can't put too much pressure on, if this one thing isn't correct, then, you know, we're not a data-driven company because we put all of our eggs in one basket. And just like finding ways to incrementally improve as you're trying to get to that, like, you don't change culture with a memo. You don't change culture overnight.
Exactly. So I've seen, if you really take it down to the team level, you know, if you want to encourage teams of doing experiments, don't start with the biggest thing that your major customer is asking for. Try something that is, you know, interesting to learn the answer to, but relatively insignificant if everything just doesn't work out. You know, just try it out. It's much more important to learn how to do the process of doing an experiment, of getting insight from data, than it is the sort of the directly attributable revenue that you can cut from doing that first experiment. You need to learn how to walk first of all, and then the speed will come later. So it's all about learning to get that speed and that trust and mindset within the team of leaning upon data more than was previously done.
Yeah, and inherent trust in data, we don't have it at all. Nobody trusts the data. Everyone's like, how is this created? What's the, you know, like you don't just inherently find data and you trust it. And you shouldn't even in a high trust organization, but getting there is so important. Well, Stephen, we've covered a whole bunch of different stuff in this conversation. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you would have liked to, or any way you'd kind of want to wrap up the episode?
No, I think we covered a lot of good things. It's always good to have these conversations. It also helps me to reflect back on my experiences as well. So really enjoyed the chat, Scott.
Yeah, me too. And I'm sure other people would love to chat with you as well. So, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people who'd like to follow up. What's the best place to follow up? What, do you have anything specific you'd like them following up about?
Yeah, I mean, for anyone listening who's interested to follow up, please feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. That's the best place to reach me. Happy to have any conversations around data-powered products, data-informed decision-making, data mesh in general, particularly machine learning and AI, particularly with some of the changes we're seeing. Coming in these months right now. And keep an eye on my LinkedIn to follow me in my next challenges.
Awesome. And we'll drop a link to your LinkedIn in the show notes as per usual. But Stephen, thank you so much for your time today. And thank you everyone out there as well for listening.
I'd again like to thank my guest today, Stephen Galsworthy, former head of data at TomTom. You can find a link to his LinkedIn in the show notes as per usual. Thank you. Thanks everyone for listening to another great guest on the Data Mesh Learning Podcast. Thanks again to our sponsors, especially DataStax, who actually pays for me full-time to help out the Data Mesh community. If you're looking for a scalable, extremely cost-efficient, multi-data center, multi-cloud database offering and or an easy-to-scale data streaming offering, check DataStax out. There's a link in the show notes. If you want to get in touch with me, there's links in the show notes to go ahead and reach out. I would love to hear more about what you're doing with Data Mesh and how I can be helpful. So please do reach out and let me know, as well as if you'd like to be a guest. Check out the show notes for more information. Thanks so much.